cooperation over chaos. We are all in this together.
The Sustainable Hour.
For a green, clean, sustainable Geelong. The Sustainable Hour.
Welcome to the Sustainable Hour. As always, we'd like to acknowledge that we're broadcasting from the land of the Wathaurong people. We pay tribute to the elders, past, present, and those that earn that great honour in the future. We're broadcasting from stolen land, land that was never ceded, always was and always will be First Nations land. And the reason we place so much importance on this is to acknowledge that they are the longest continually surviving culture on the planet. Nurturing their land and their communities was central to their way of living. And there's so much in that ancient wisdom for us as we navigate the climate crisis.
This is mad. We are the only species that will go out and spray toxic chemicals on our food to prevent other living creatures from eating it, and then go and eat it ourselves. That must be the definition of madness.
Kenneth Keevy from Green Earths Organic. And yes, it's madness. And yet, yesterday, we saw thousands of farmers lining up with their tractors in front of Parliament, protesting new laws that are going to reduce the amount of chemicals and fertilizers that farmers in the near future will be allowed to use on their land. Not in Australia, no, this time around in Denmark, where I happen to be at this moment. But there is a solution to all the madness, and it begins with you, our listeners of the Sustainable Hour. Today's topic in the Sustainable Hour is zero waste and AI data centers. But first of all, as always, over to Colin Mockett, OAM, who's got the kind of global outlook and perspective which our mainstream media so embarrassingly fails to provide you with.
Yes, thank you, Mick. And this week I'm going to begin not with the Nepal glacier mudslide, nor the fires, floods and heat waves that are worldwide, because they're now regularly reported in the mainstream media, although they are rarely linked to climate change, even though it is behind all of them. So instead, I'd like to begin in the US, where the Trump administration last week released yet another piece of environmental rollback legislation that's called the Colorado River Plan. It lasted just 3 days before it was challenged in the courts by some surprisingly heavy opposition from Las Vegas. The surprise is because up until now, the casino-owning moguls have been solidly behind Trump's MAGA schemes. But the new plan could see their state, Nevada, lose more than 70% of its already sparse Colorado River water allocation. And that would have a devastating effect on the city of Las Vegas. That's according to the general manager of the Southern Nevada Water Authority, whose name is John Entsminger. Under the new Trump plan, Southern Nevada faced cuts to its allocated water in all future years, while Colorado, Utah, New Mexico and Wyoming wouldn't face any cuts at all. Of the seven states that rely on the river for its water, Nevada already gets the smallest amount. Now the state's water authorities are saying the long-term impacts from the proposed cuts would be devastating, with Las Vegas bearing most of the pain. Now these people are going to put quite a fight up against Donald Trump, and up until now they've been backing him. Meanwhile, back home in Canberra, the federal government has spent years declaring its ambitions for Australia to become a renewable energy superpower, exporting what the world needs to decarbonise things such as green iron and critical minerals. But remarkably, little of that conversation has been about the state that will be central to achieving this goal. That's WA, Western Australia, which is looking more and more unwilling to cooperate with any federal plans. Western Australia is the world's largest producer of iron ore and lithium, the second largest producer of alumina, and the world's third largest liquefied natural gas exporter. It's also the only Australian state to have increased its total greenhouse gas emissions since 1990. This is largely on the back of the incredible growth in iron ore and LNG exports. Those emissions aren't just nationally significant. The downstream emissions from burning WA's gas and smelting its iron ore and alumina overseas are roughly 16 times the state's domestic emissions. So although they've got high emissions in the state of Western Australia, they export 16 times that amount which is burned elsewhere in the world, which significantly is 2.6% of all global emissions. That's exported from WA. Crucially, undermining WA's exports and emissions problems is its reliance on diesel. The state's mining, transport and agricultural sections all rely almost entirely on diesel for their energy needs. Now, the repeated closure of the Strait of Hormuz this year has been a warning about the risk of reliance on energy imports to WA, yet the Commonwealth's response has been a $15 billion package that's directed almost entirely at securing the supply of refined fuels and fertiliser. That's instead of reducing our dependency through decarbonisation. In July, Prime Minister Anthony Albanese and WA's Premier Roger Cook jointly announced a $4 million study into the construction of a new oil refinery. And you can guess where it is. It's in WA, in the state. It's a move more suited to last century than today, when we need to be looking ahead to a clean energy future. All other Australian states are legislating and planning their own versions of a renewable future, as they should, but none have the potential of WA, where its iron ore would become green iron. Its lithium and rare earths could go into batteries and magnets for EVs and transport. WA has the land, the sun and the wind at the scale that a heavy industry requires, and the resources, infrastructure and expertise. If Australia is going to earn export income from decarbonisation, rather than merely talk about it, it has to begin in the West. Now, all of this information came from a new report that was released last week called Clean Power, Securing WA's Future Prosperity. And surprisingly, it wasn't commissioned by Canberra or the WA government, but from a WA independent MP, Kate Cheney. Her report warned of not acting decisively, and it used the example of the global car industry. It says that China sent an electric vehicle strategy 2 decades ago and put public money into battery manufacturing and refining lithium, cobalt, manganese and graphite. The motive was to reduce their dependence on imported oil that left China captive to foreign powers. And that investment has paid off. China now makes about 90% of the world's battery components and more than 3/4 of its electric vehicles. By comparison, Japan hesitated. The first mass-market electric cars were Japanese, but its manufacturers kept backing combustion engines, hybrids and hydrogen, and treating electrification as a longer-term project. The US and much of Europe did the same. But they're now all scrambling to get back on course after seeing China overtake them. Waiting didn't reduce the cost of the transition. It meant paying more later and losing your market share. The report also noted that the Iran war has pushed Australian EV sales to record highs. It says Australian consumers are now clear about which future they're backing, and economics and energy security, not climate, are the motivators. And the report concludes that if WA's renewable energy transition moves faster than the rest of the world, Australia would end up with cheap domestic electricity, an energy supply we control, and lower emissions. But if WA moves slower than the other nations, Australia will be left with fossil fuel assets that nobody wants, an economy still running on fuel brought in from somewhere else, and we would have sacrificed our position in new export markets. Now that's where Japan and Europe are now when it comes to EVs. It's looking unlikely that they will catch up with China's environmental transition. So the examples are there. We just need to heed them and take the right decisions now. And that note of timely warning ends my roundup for the week.
Listen to our Sustainable Hour for the future.
Our guest today is Kirsty Bishop-Fox. Kirsty's always on around about this time of the year, so I'm tipping that the Zero Waste Festival is coming up. Kirsty's also very active in the Zero Waste movement in Victoria, one of the leading lights in that. So, Kirsty, thanks for coming on. And what's happening? What does it look like this year? What can we expect at this year's festival?
What can we expect at this year's festival? We have an incredible lineup of talks, clothes swaps, and our brand new ReWear runway this year. Our ReWear runway, it's the first time we've had that at the festival, so it's super exciting. It was a small idea that we had to, instead of just talking about fashion and talking about textiles, because there's so much waste in this space, we thought we'd put a call out to creatives, designers, students, home sewers, anyone who's upcycled clothing that they wear. And we've had such an incredible response from that. We were hoping maybe 20, 25 people might apply. We had over 80. And so the incredible thing is some of our team have actually judged them. It was very tough for them to judge, but we've got the top 28, which will be displaying their upcycled garments on the ReWear runway.
Well, that's wonderful, Kirsty. How did you manage to reduce 80 contestants down to 28?
Well, our team, they looked at, three key criteria. One, of course, very importantly, was sustainability. So all the applicants had to put a story in about the garment that they're making. What are they making it from? Where did the materials come from? And the stories varied. Some were from op shops, some were from clothes that they had, some were kimonos that had been passed down through the generations. And whatever it was, that story was considered. And then we looked at creativity. You know, what did they do with these things? You know, was it something standard or however it was? And most importantly, wearability, functional. Is it a functional outfit? Not something, we didn't want things that were designed and looked amazing, but probably weren't going to be worn elsewhere.
You make it sound very competitive. Is there a winner?
Yes, there is. There actually is.
Good.
Yes.
Who won?
Well, we'll find out. We'll find out that the festival runs from 12 to 6 and the ReWear runway, which is part of the festival, sort of starts from 6, and we've got some industry judges who will be judging. To be really upfront with you, I believe everybody who actually took the time to enter are winners, because it's really incredible the outfits they did. The idea is to inspire people to go, you know what, we can give that a second life. And we can wear it, we can change it, and we don't have to throw things out.
Good. Look, now that you've baited the trap, can you take a picture of the winner, send it to Tony, and we will publish it with next week's Sustainable Hour?
Absolutely.
Good.
I'll be there so I can take it. So cut out the middleman, the middle person.
Even better.
Yeah.
You might even win. I mean, I'm assuming that, Tony, you and I are of the same ilk, and that I don't mostly buy my clothes in op shop. I buy all my clothes in op shops. I'm addicted to op shops. Are you the same?
Pretty much, yeah. He'd be a fashion icon in Geelong then, with that form.
Oh, yeah. I've been that way for 40 years. It's the, what's it now called? It's the circular economy, isn't it? And I went into Kmart for the first time maybe a month ago for a particular reason. Somebody asked me to go in there for them. I was stunned because the last time I went into Kmart, there was a cafeteria at the back of the place, and it was quite a nice sort of shop. Now it's it's fast fashion, fast food fashion sort of stuff. It's horrible. Yeah. And one of the things I've been noticing, you must notice too, Kirsty, virtually all op shops are full of Kmart stuff now. I kept wondering where what's the name of the company? Well, whatever it is, it's a Kmart brand, and they don't last very long.
Or something, I don't
know. Yeah, they don't last long because they all wind up in op shops.
Mm.
What's the most transition that you've seen on your runway this year?
Look, I can't give you full insight into that because I haven't done any of the judging. So I haven't seen, I've had a look at a few things, but I don't have quite the insight there. But I've seen a few of the things that the designers have put up on social media. Very excited they've got in. So the people have done things with ties and made outfits out of ties. Ties are a really interesting one because ties are just not worn the way they once were.
Yep. I remember seeing a skirt, a really attractive young lady wearing a skirt made of men's ties or with the bottom V's making a sort of a jagged bottom or hem to the skirt. And it was, I don't know, strangely erotic because they're all bloke stuff. And there she was looking divine in it.
Yeah.
So, yes, you can use ties in lots of different ways.
Kirsty, are there any, what you call professional people that have entered the competition, like people that are making these clothes for a market?
Look, there may be some. I don't, to be really upfront with you, I haven't gone through them, so I didn't look at any of those details. And when they were judged, that's not something that we looked at either. Like we wanted to take out, if they were a student, we wanted to take out all the background and just look at what was in front of us. I say us in the sense that I sort of have oversight to it, and I work with the criteria with the team, and really what they did was they looked at that criteria. So there may be, there were definitely some who applied who were in that category, but we're not quite sure where they fit. It'll be something that we'll find out on the day, and we're really conscious that the judging is based on the garment. But, you know, I say judging, you know, they are being judged. It's part of a competition, but it's also to inspire as well too. Like it's just, it's really incredible. And, you know, I'd have been happy for people just to walk down, but the team decided to make it judging. But it's really just, I really hope that people who come to see this go, you know what, I would wear that. I would pay for that. I could make that, depending where they sit. It's just putting a spotlight on textiles in a really different way. And we do hope that, because we do know that there are quite a number of students who applied and will be displaying their work as well too. And one of the things that we want to really hope that students came in, and we say students because these are emerging designers, so these are people who are being trained to go into the place as well too. And we know that sometimes they do sustainability units or the whole design course might be about sustainability, but it doesn't always translate the way they hope it will when they get out into the workforce. So we're trying to put a spotlight on that to say, you know, it can and should, and we want it to be done.
Great.
Terrific.
That's the fashion out the way. What else is at the festival? But more to the nuts and bolts of the thing, when and where and at what times?
Saturday, 12th of September, starting at 12 p.m, going through till 7:30. So it's a very big day.
Where?
Fed Square.
Brilliant.
And what you've mentioned talks, and I know I've been there in the past. There's been some really informative talks and discussions. What can we look forward to there this year?
Well, a whole lot of fun and a whole lot of serious deep dives. And by fun, I mean we're starting with our mutual friend, Costa Georgiadis, is joining us for the first time in person this year. Yes. Now, he's been with us online in 20 and 21, and he's helped support us in other ways with little videos and things he's made for us. But we'll be opening with his Melbourne book launch of his book, Costa's Garden Fruit. So it's a kids' book, but adults are welcome to come as well too, because we all love Costa. We're encouraging people to wear their fruitiest outfit and get into it with a bit of fun. Yeah.
Okay, Costa's on first, and then what can we expect after him?
After him, we've got Rethinking Plastic, the Good, the Bad, and the Biodegradable. So I'll be moderating that panel, and we'll hear from Kip Hamilton from Australian Marine Conservation Society. And the work they do is incredibly interesting in the sense that they've had recently launched their Unpack It Awards. And these are the best and the worst of packaging. So she'll be talking to us about that. And also some of the other things that are happening in terms of packaging reform. What is happening? What's not happening? What should be happening?
And will their definition of biodegradable be looked at?
It's one of those challenging things. It's a word that means a whole lot of different things depending on the lens that you look through it. Biodegradable doesn't necessarily mean compostable. It doesn't even mean it's petroleum free, unfortunately. It does mean that it breaks down. But we will have a researcher who'll be talking about something slightly different, in the sense that she's working on packaging that is biodegradable, compostable, like really good packaging that also extends the life of food. So that's looking in early stages. It's not out there yet, but she'll be actually talking through some of the challenges and barriers in terms of having this concept that works on a small scale to going through the right testing. But what's really significant about this is that it can extend the shelf life of some of our refrigerated food. So that's really interesting as well too.
For sure. Is that person from one of the unis?
Deakin.
Well, a lot of interest in Deakin in Geelong, seeing it's the home university. And I know it's got places in Melbourne as well, but, yeah, no, they're doing lots of great work. Well, all the unis are doing lots of great work, as we've shown over the years. Yeah. What else can we expect?
Yeah, an interesting one. Everyday sustainability, progress over perfection. Now, Costa will be moderating this panel discussion, and we'll be hearing from some really unexpected voices on topics that don't always get the attention that they deserve. We're going to have Adi Gupta, who's actually a disability advocate because he's a blind adventurer, he calls himself.
So, okay.
He's legally blind. He does have some sight. It's peripheral that's problematic. But his challenge is he can't always find the bin, let alone know the right bin. But he absolutely wants to do that right thing. And sometimes the challenge is we find people in the disability space that have barriers to being as sustainable as they like. And sometimes it's surprising what those barriers are for them. So that'll be a really interesting one to unpack.
Yeah. That's something I know. That's something that I've certainly just taken it for granted, I guess, because I'm abled myself. But yeah, there's so much that we take for granted that the impacts on people that have any sort of disability, the problems they face in everyday life. Yeah. So that'd be good. Look forward to that one.
Yeah, that's right. And we'll be joined on that panel by Anna Matilda, known as the Urban Nana. She always brings the traditional way of doing things back. And sometimes she spoke at the festival before. She actually is a real advocate for those who are a bit neurodiverse and have different sorts of challenges as well too. But she's also a wealth of knowledge on traditional ways, preserving, keeping, lasting. So she's a great one there. Then we'll be talking about decluttering in that same panel and Repair Cafe. So it's everyday actions we can do with maybe a little twist to consider things that we don't think of all the time.
Now, the Repair Cafe, does this mean you're getting people coming up with broken things?
Absolutely. Yeah. So well, Diana,
who's bring anything broken to Federation Square on the 12th of September and get it fixed.
broken and possibly fixable. And I say that like electronics are fine, but if it's been smashed to pieces, they're not that amazing. When I say that, you know, I just think of some of the broken things I've seen in my time. But yes, so the repair cafes will be there as well too. So anything that, if it's electrical, a bike, clothing, if there's a hole in it, you want to learn how to sew or darn, that'll be happening at the Fed Square too.
It's almost sort of taking things back in time. You've got the lady doing bottling, presumably fruits, and that's preserving things in glass as opposed to plastic. You've got people who are looking for non-fossil fuel plastic to preserve food, which if it's as you described, it wouldn't be a fossil. It wouldn't be a petroleum-based plastic. Mm-hmm. It would be based on something else. I know that they make food, some food plastics are made from potatoes or the potato waste from people like McCain's.
Yes.
They can use that as a base for making a food plastic. The big trouble is, of course, it's all undercut because fossil fuel petroleum is so much cheaper than everything else.
Mm-hmm. And I think the biggest thing too, like, it's really important, like, we can't dismiss the need for the packaging things, because obviously packaging things out our food, that's the way it works, particularly when it extends the life of it. We always like to keep the focus though on what we can reduce and avoid in the first place. If we can avoid it, then yes, looking at options that are more sustainable are incredibly important. But so many things are overpackaged these days, and it's really problematic.
She walks the site before the plants, reads the ground, checks the scans. Food and fuel, fragile chains. Pull one thread, the whole thing shakes. Reshape our world by being kind. People, not for cars. Leave space where people can meet and breathe. Where a stranger turns to a friend. Where the broken starts to mend. Balancing the books and the land. Building more but with less in hand. Not everyone can hold the strain. There's give and take, there's loss and gain. We've forgotten the ways we once knew. Our soil is dying, the waters rise. Every day matters, the pressure climbs. It takes many more of us to change.
To sort of say to people is, be brave, don't give up now. The harder it looks, the kind of more we have to rally and look after each other.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the future of packaging. We found a way of making products that look like plastics, feel like plastics, and even perform just like plastics, but they decompose at the end of their lifetime. My name is Joseph Nguthiru, and I am the UN Young Champion of the Earth. We produce this out of water hyacinth, the world's most invasive aquatic weed. It's a weed that grows on top of lakes and waterways in more than 70 countries around the world, mostly in the global south. Blocks fishing, navigation, irrigation, kills fish, and is even a breeding ground for mosquitoes that then cause malaria to the local communities. It reproduces incredibly fast, every 6 to 12 days, and that's why it's so hard to manage. I found out that by extracting the cellulose out of the plant, we can make a product that's just as flexible, durable, and performing just like plastics. At my startup, Hyapak, we now work together with these affected fishing communities to harvest the water hyacinth for us and dry it. And by doing that, they earn money. So far, creating over 45 green jobs for them, just as you would break up from a toxic relationship. Let's break up from a toxic relationship with plastics. It is time to let single-use plastics remain single.
Kirsty, people want to find out, like you've been mentioning, that some of the talks that are going to happen. Is there a program that's like on your website or somewhere that they can go to?
If you search Zero Waste Festival, you'll either find the website or Humanitics. Get your tickets from Humanitics and you'll have all of the everything there as well too. But I do want to do a bit of a twist to our program because we've actually got something that we're covering which is a little bit different to what we've spoken about. It's big, it's important, it's current, and it's on many people's minds. The rise of data centres and the hidden footprint of AI.
Good.
Now, it's something we're absolutely hearing a lot about, and rightly so. We're largely hearing about the water and the energy, and we'll be covering those to a degree as well too. But what's not being spoken about, and you touched on a little bit this earlier in the start, is the rare minerals that are being used to create the equipment that goes in there, and then what happens when the equipment becomes obsolete. Because the turnover in these data centres can be 2 to 5 years, and I would say 5 as being incredibly optimistic. It's only a few years. And in Australia, I don't know what the data is. I can't find it. But I do know that we are looking at the challenges with recycling solar panels. So if that's the challenge there, how are we going to manage the obsolescence of the equipment in these data centres? And that's not something that's being considered as well too. We're actually looking at it from that perspective, but also from an ethical perspective. We've got a couple of researchers. One of those researchers is, of course, in computer science and that type of area. But one of the researchers is actually got a legal background. So should we talk about that? Yeah. Yes. Because while there's the equipment, which is really important, there's the AI, and that is distorting so many messages, not just climate, but including climate.
So how are you tackling the subject physically? Have you got a panel that'll be on stage at the end?
Yes, absolutely. We've got Professor Jeannie Patterson, Bronwyn Clark, who's the CEO of the National Growth Areas Alliance, and she has an interesting perspective because she's a community advocate. So she's looking at where they're placing these data centres. And then we'll have Jathan Sadowski, who is an associate professor in the Department of Human-Centered Computing at Monash Uni. So that'll be a really interesting panel, which will be moderated by Dr. Dylan Bird, who's a journalism lecturer at RMIT Uni, and he's a broadcaster too.
The difficulty, of course, is that it's too late to stop anything now. They're already building the things, aren't they?
They'll
be obsolete in 5 years, and they'll be looking for something different. Might not be bigger, but certainly will be different.
Yeah, and the thing with these data centres is data centres, they're not new. They've been around for a long time, and we need to be a little bit, we've got to look at data centres completely in the sense that if we're listening to, if we're using the internet, if we have an email, if we have a bank account, that's all connected to a data centre. But of course, the incredible increase has come for a number of reasons, and AI is a very big one of them. And what we really want people to start looking at is AI has some really positive and important attributes to society. It's being used in medicine to help with diagnoses. And that's something that we can't dismiss, and we absolutely want to have. It's life-saving. Yep. But on the other hand, it's not all life-saving, and some of it's really driven, I would say, through corporations who aren't being completely transparent about their motives and intention with using it. And they're the bigger questions that we need to be asking: why and what is going to happen to that? Because while it might serve a company well, is it serving us as a society well?
And whether they should expect to be given, like huge users of energy, and whether they should expect to be able to get that, to get access to the energy at the expense of someone else. It'll be good to hear that discussion, just to shine those extra lumens on something that has snuck up on us.
Really, though, Tony, has it? It's just a different name. We called it, at the beginning of this century, we called them supercomputers. They could crunch numbers much, much higher than other ones. Then suddenly they started calling them data centers, and that was just simply bigger computers that are able to work their computations out.
Yeah, as an issue, I think it snuck up on us.
And I do think we need to look at it in the sense that when we look at the data centres for AI, it's like, yes, you can pay to use AI, but there are many free ways that anyone can use AI. Why is that free, and why is AI losing the money right now? Well, there's a very big motive, and that motive, there's many of them, but one of the biggest ones is to advertise. So if the AIs are being used as advertising, are we even going to be able to trust anything at all? The youth of today, I've had conversations with youth, and it's very interesting because they're very like, what do we believe? We don't know who or what we can believe. And with these, you know, these generative models, it's only adding and compacting to that. So it's a really big issue. Waste and environment is central to it, but it's got so many prongs to it that, you know, they used to call it, they still do, you know, we used to go, oh, yeah, it's in the cloud. Well, the cloud is actually, you know. So it's one of those things, like the horse is bolted and it's out there, but it's how much do we need and where do we draw the line? And, you know, I was in an interesting conversation just on the weekend where they were saying, it's like, you know, I use AI and I was doing it to make my emails better, but then I looked at emails I wrote a few years ago and they were actually okay.
The real thing that worries me is the conjunction of AI with algorithms, because what AI is doing is looking at everything you talk about or send emails about or read about, and then saying, "Ah, this lady's interested in recycling. So therefore, we will send lots of recycling stuff in her direction and cut out anything that isn't recycling." And you're going to wind up with everybody having their own little monoculture around them simply because of what they've done in the past. And it might just have been that they'd been to your festival.
In that case, I think it's very good. However, the algorithm doesn't always feed me what I want to see. I've seen something, I've watched something, I've gone, I don't want to see that anymore, and then I'm seeing all of this stuff that I don't want to be seeing.
Yep. I had a problem with my cooker a week ago, or a couple of weeks ago now, and so I look for solutions in the internet by saying, you know, how could it be fixed and blah, blah, blah. Now, every single thing that I go to, it's trying to sell me a different cooker. There are cookers everywhere. And to the extent where I think, I've had enough of this, I'll just close the thing down. And the problem's about solved. I'm still inundated with cookers. And it's not going to stop there. It's going to get worse. It's one thing that we know. with the advent of AI and algorithms, it can only get worse. I'm down there somewhere up in the cloud. The AI has worked out that I'm a cooker guy.
I thought it was going to be quite a lot more demanding.
You pick and eat, it never tastes better.
That's something that I'm so excited by.
When you heat cup, take a stand. Say no to plastic, give the planet a hand. Feel the joy, feel the grace. Living like no money to waste. Join the wave, it's taking place. Lots of things happening in this space. Zero waste, give you a better taste of life in a nutshell. When we do it well, less in the bin, more in your soul. Step by step, we're in control.
Because it tastes so good.
Got my plate and my coffee cup. No single use. I level up. Farmers markets, bulk by store. Support local and waste no more. Hey. Keep this the cool stuff, reusing it style. Swap the share, it's all worthwhile. Wash those dishes, ditch the trash. Sustainable living, make it a splash.
Human beings need to get to a point where it's really bad before everybody wakes up and goes, we need to do things differently. And I think that, that we're at that point.
Because it tastes so good, because we're just picking it from the garden, we actually don't have to do too much.
You pick and eat, it never tastes better.
Zero waste gives you a better taste of life in a nutshell. When we do it well, less in the bin, more in your soul. Step by step, we're in control. One small step.
There's a real call now to change the way we live, to change what we do, to change the materials that we use. That's something that I'm so excited by.
There's so many different things that we can do. It's like a choose your own adventure book. And there's no better adventure out there than working together to save the planet.
Hi, my name is Arya Satish and I'm a young bioeconomy researcher from Ireland. I built EcoPurge, a biodegradable plastic that not only degrades by itself, but releases an enzyme into the environment to degrade existing microplastics. I was inspired by the growing problem of plastic pollution and wanted to find a way to make biodegradable materials even more useful by degrading existing microplastics. My next approach is to genetically modify the enzyme and produce it in a larger scale by the use of batch culture, making it both cost-friendly and more effective. I think EcoPurge deserves to win because it provides a sustainable and a practical solution to a big global problem, which is plastic pollution.
Now, that's all good, Kirsty, but festivals are all about food. What sort of food will people enjoy at your festival on the 12th of September at Federation Square?
Well, whatever the food I will enjoy, I can tell you it's going to be zero waste. All the food, all the coffee, all the drinks, we have Green My Plate. So you'll be able to have reusables there. We actually have them washed on site, so which is a really great way to reduce waste. It's something that we think about and put a lot of energy into doing where we are.
But are you asking people to come with their keep cups?
They can bring their keep cups. We always encourage that. But if they forget their keep cup, then we've actually got reusable cups that will be washed on site.
Right. So people can come and get a cup of coffee from you and they'll have a cup that they can reuse elsewhere.
Well, they can reuse it at the festival. So they get we bring My Plate come in and they actually have all, they provide all the cups and all the crockery and everything that we need. So that way we can do away with the takeaway packaging while you're at the festival.
Right. Now, you haven't got those wooden forks, have you?
Absolutely not. No, we have only reusables. Yeah.
And you haven't got plastic forks either.
There's nothing disposable.
Right. What are you doing with all the excess food?
The excess food? Well, I guess there's a couple of aspects here. So we've got like Oh My Donor. That's one of the food vendors. And they cater to the numbers that are there. And being a food van truck, they actually look at being as sustainable as they can. So they actually order in that amount and just continue on. So there's really little waste at the festival.
So if you have any food over because it's raining on the day, who gets it?
Well, what will happen is being the food trucks, they actually...
They take it.
Yeah. So we don't have that there. So it's up to people if they get food or not. But speaking of food, we do have a panel on food. Like, we're having a zero-waste cooking food style. So affectionately, we've got Lily Jiang, who's an amazing chef from... It's called Feed One, Feed All, and they're a charity that actually make meals for people who need support with the meals. And probably about half of the food that they get actually is rescue food. So they don't know what they're going to be cooking from week to week. The menu's always changing. But she's going to come in and give us some ideas. So if we're looking in the bottom of our fridge and going, how can I have dinner? She's incredible at taking three ingredients and turning them into something amazing.
Brilliant. Okay, so we've covered fashions. We've covered Costa, who is a fashion icon. Yes. We've covered food. What haven't we covered that you can find at your festival? And what are you particularly looking forward to on our roundup, because we're coming towards the end now?
Can I talk about our friends at the festival where it's...
Of course you can.
Our friends at the festival, look, the festival has been put on this year. Hang on, let me take it back. We went ahead with the festival this year despite not having the grant funding that we usually do. It was a massive risk for us to put it on, but we believed it's incredibly important, too important for us not to. We couldn't do this event without the massive team of volunteers behind us, but we've still got costs to put it on. So while we do have some sponsorship, which is amazing, the Friends of the Festival is a way that the community can support our festival with some bonuses. So they'll actually get front row seating. They'll get opportunities to meet and greet the speakers and have some photos taken with them. They'll have opportunities to have some recycling tours after the festival, and bragging rights for being a festival friend. So we're actually, it's been really interesting, the uptake of that. Those who come to the festival itself between 12 and 6, they'll have access to all four speaking panels, and they'll be able to do that as well too. And for the Reway Runway, which is a separate ticketing system, they'll have pre-event drinks and nibbles before the Reway Runway starts. So it's $100 for these tickets, and I'm actually able to offer your listeners a discount. I'll put a code in the link. And if they want to support the festival, that would be amazing.
And so what discount are you offering for Sustainable Hour friends?
A 20% discount.
So $80 gets you $100 friends of festival, and you get all of those benefits that you've just unwound for us.
That's right, as well as bragging rights as being a friend of the festival supporter.
Great. Now, how do they go about it? On your website, I'm assuming?
Yeah.
And how do you find the website?
Just if you search Zero Waste Festival, you'll find the website. You'll either get to the website or you'll get to Humanitics. Actually, you know what? How about we just use the code WASTEFREE? We'll do that because it's memorable. Yeah?
Yep, WASTEFREE.
Use the code WASTEFREE for 20% off the Friends of the Festival tickets.
Well, look, that's wonderful. How many festivals have you done now?
9. This is the 9th.
Good on you. Well, we are supporting you all the way, and we've got some incredibly well-heeled friends. So I'm hopeful that you're going to be getting one or two extra from this, just from this broadcast.
That'd be amazing.
Now, we like, as you know, to finish off our Sustainable Hours with a B sentence, a cliche with starting with B. It started with B, the difference, and then we looked for difference on that. So we wound up with be aware, be alert, and be... What would you say would be a good one that would come on side with your festival, with zero waste?
I'm going to say be a friend of the festival supporter.
Atta girl.
Yeah.
Can I say that?
Bragging. Yeah, of course you can.
That's a recommendation from all of us.
Be a friend of the festival supporter and have bragging rights.
Yeah, it's a great event. It really is each year. So
thank you.
Looking forward to it.
Looking at your face right now, as you scroll through the headlines, I see the worry in your eyes about the world we leave behind. And I know you're wondering if anyone will make it right. But baby, let me tell you something that keeps me up at night. There's still time to change the way things are going day by day. And when you feel like giving up, remember what I say. I can be that difference. I can be that change. That difference starting from today. Guys, seen the videos of how things used to be, clear skies and clean waters. It's hard to believe, but I'm not just sitting here waiting for a miracle. Got my friends beside me now, making it possible. Every small step counts, they say. Little changes pave the way. When it seems too much to bear, listen close. I swear I can be that difference. Change. I can be that difference starting from today. We rise together, hand in hand we'll find a way. We rise together, every choice we make today shapes tomorrow's way. I can be that difference. Oh, I can be that change. From today.